From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Oakland, California.
North Oakland.
North Oakland.
North Berkeley.
South Berkeley.
Adams Point.
Yosemite.
Coming up, we'll hear how an unexpected Mexican Punjabi community formed in California's Central Valley.
The food, how it was similar, and how the, you know, their mothers would learn to make rotis and carnitas and their sag. And
then we'll try some falafel recipes from all over the Middle East.
Who makes the best falafel?
Me.
And we'll mix musical traditions with a Bay Area singer who's bringing it down to the essentials.
Every person in some way can be a singer, you know, and can tell their story. There's something really human about it and really simple.
We're singing it loud and proud. That's today on Cross Currents. California has long been a land of possibility, from the gold rush to the promise of fertile farmland. People from all over the world have flocked here for the chance at a new life, and that's created some unexpected immigrant communities. One of those was in the state's central and imperial valleys. In the early 1900s, Punjabi men came to the area to plant fruit trees, hoping to make their fortunes in peaches and plums. Family life was important, but restrictive immigration policies made it impossible for them to bring along their wives. So many of them married Mexican immigrant women who worked in their orchards. The marriages created an unlikely subculture of Punjabi Mexicans. And now the children of these mixed marriages are reaching the end of their lives. That's why two Bay Area dance companies joined together to tell the story of this unique cultural overlap. KALW's Sandia Dirks has the story.
1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, and 4, and then 1.
A semicircle of about a dozen dancers, decked out in fancy boots, are stomping their feet in complex rhythms. But this isn't a typical rehearsal for Ensembles Ballet Folclorico de San Francisco, a troupe that preserves traditional Mexican folk dances. That's because soon, dancers from Dunia Dance and Drum Company jump in, their knees bent wide in the Punjabi style of Indian dance called Bhangra. Each clutches a sop, a percussion instrument that looks like one of those accordion-style coat racks. You bang it together to make a beat.
You guys, the show is in 2 weeks, okay? So this is the time to do it at performance level, right? And performance energy.
That's Jyoti Singh, the artistic director of Dunia. She's gently reminding her dancers to step up their game for the coming performance of Half and Halves. The show marries the dances of Mexico and the Punjab. It tells the story of couples who met and made lives together in California's farmlands in the early 20th century.
A lot of the women were working out in the fields, just barely making it, trying to...
The show's soundtrack includes testimonials, like this one, from the children of those marriages.
They met someone who was kind to them, and offered them a better life, and they took it. But the men were very, very good to their wives, to the last one. My dad treated my mother like a queen.
During the rehearsal, folklorico dancers ritually and elegantly swirl and twirl around a couple, a folklorico bride, and a bhangra groom. Dunia's artistic director, Jyoti Singh, coaches Rajiv Khanna, who's playing the husband.
And you need to really convince us that you like this girl.
See, Khanna is not a professional, but Singh recruited him after he took a few classes at Dunia.
Folklorico dance, yeah, that's really, really tough, actually. Like I was saying, I'm not a dancer, so learning these steps has been kind of like a foreign language for me.
Foreign language is an apt metaphor. Because these couples didn't share a native language, they communicated through English. There were thousands of couples like this, and their children are now in their 70s and 80s. Jyoti Singh and her co-creator traveled across the state to interview them as part of making the show. She says some themes emerged in the interviews.
They talked about farming life and how their
their fathers felt like California resembled Punjab so much, the landscape.
Even though the mothers were Catholic and the fathers, for the most part, Sikh, they found a way to merge their traditions while still staying true to their religions, like the story of a Sikh father who was cremated and then his ashes laid to rest in the grave next to his wife. Singh says the cultures overlapped and fused in other ways, too.
The food, how it was similar, and how the, you know, their mothers would learn to make rotis and, you know, would put carnitas in their sag. And
carnitas, as anyone who has ever eaten at a taco truck knows, is pork simmered in lard until it melts in the mouth. Sag is a traditional Indian spinach dish made flavorful with garam masala. Now imagine those flavors mixing together. Fusion, whether it is food or interracial marriage, is something we for the most part embrace today. But Singh says for a long time, she thought of it as a thing that's just happening now.
And so to realize that people were doing this so long ago, and especially South Asians who are very insular in terms of marriage and marrying, you know, marrying not only within, okay, you have to be Indian and then you have to be the right religion and the right, you know, caste within that religion and all of those things. And then to me, I thought was unheard of, these kind of mixed couples existing.
Singh's parents are Punjabi. Growing up in the U.S., she says she didn't feel like she belonged in one place or the other.
I feel like that experience of growing up and feeling like, okay, this, you know, I'm not completely Indian, I'm not completely American, you know, that was, I looked at these couples and this history and I was like, wow, people have been negotiating this for a really long time. And now I'm married to a Ghanaian and my daughter is half West African, half South Asian.
The dancers are also juggling the dance culture they know with the new one that they are learning. All of the Indian dancers kept trying to move their hands, says Ballet Folklorico dance director Zenon Baron. But that just isn't how they do it in Mexico.
In our culture, we do a lot of footwork, but we never use the arms a lot. So most of the time we use the arms down or on the back.
Folklorico dancer Meredith Bellany says that means they have to watch each other for cues.
It's different. You have to use your body in a different way that's not always familiar. And we're doing their pieces. We're looking at them. When they're doing our pieces, they're looking at us.
The thing is, that description of dancing, it sounds a lot like falling in love. When you meet someone, you often look to them to see how to be yourself in that moment, and they do the same with you. When your families come from different cultures, you need to look to each other even more, because often your relationship becomes the one thread between worlds. For Cross Currents, I'm Sandhya Dirks.
Half and Halves, a dance exploration of the Punjabi Mexican communities of California, is being performed Friday and Saturday night at the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. Find more details at kalw.org. Just click on Cross Currents. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Julie Kane. That last story mentioned one delicious side effect of two cultures coming together, new kinds of food. But preserving the age-old recipes of our ancestors can yield pretty tasty results, too.
If you cook it just right, as soon as you put it in the oil, the outside shell seals, and so it doesn't allow oil to get into it.
That's Ramsey Totery, owner of Falafel Etc. in the East Bay. It turns out there are many ways to make falafel, and you can find them right here in the Bay Area. KALW's Hanat Baba went on a falafel shop hop to find the best version of her favorite comfort food. She started out in Fremont.
My name is Ramsey Totery. Originally, I was born in Nazareth, Israel. And my dad had a falafel shop in Nazareth.
Totari is owner of Falafel Etc. in Fremont. He went to college in this country, worked in the high-tech industry for many years, but he returned to his roots with falafel.
The falafel is part of the tradition in every one of the Middle Eastern countries. Every street corner has a falafel stand on it. They don't have hamburger stands. They have falafel stands.
Totri is an Israeli-Palestinian, and where he comes from, Jews and Palestinians alike make falafel with garbanzo beans, like what I'm used to in Sudan. We're looking at a batch ready for frying.
The yellow color is the garbanzo beans, which is 95% of the mix. We add onions, garlic, parsley, cilantro, cumin.
But just before frying, Chef Ramzi adds a bit of baking soda to fluff up the falafel, he says, to make it lighter. And as my mother always told me, the oil must be hot, just like Chef Ramzi's. So the falafel balls dive like swimmers to the bottom and rise back up again.
If you cook it just right, as soon as you put it in the oil, the outside shell seals, and so it doesn't allow oil to get into it.
He's right. Crunchy on the outside, not oily on the inside. And even though he makes it every day, Chef Ramzi never tires of falafel.
Our order is 6 pieces of falafel. I'll make 7. The 7th one is the taxes, you know. Uncle Ramzi has to have his taxes, so I get a falafel and I just eat it by itself. I love eating it by itself.
Despite being proud of his Palestinian-style falafel, Ramzi Totri admits that falafel didn't originate in Palestine or Israel. Experts say it came from Egypt. So I headed over to an Egyptian sandwich shop in San Francisco. The back kitchen of Pharaoh's Mediterranean Sandwich Shop is stocked with dozens of spices, vegetables, and the smell of cilantro fills the space. Yasmin El-Morsi is preparing a fresh batch of falafel mix.
This is the fava beans that was soaked yesterday.
That's right, fava beans, not garbanzo. This is the Egyptian way, and most don't call it falafel. They call it
tameya. Falafel is like an Arab-Syrian-Palestinian word. It's not pure Egyptian word. It's called tameya.
Fava beans are a staple food in Egypt that go as far back as the pharaohs. And paintings inside their tombs, some believe, depict the act of frying falafel. Another theory is that the dish originated with Egypt's Coptic Christians as a substitute for meat during Lent. And now, thousands of years later and thousands of miles later in San Francisco, Yasmin, her father, and 4 brothers are running a restaurant that offers falafel prepared the same way.
It's a family restaurant and was family recipes. My mother's recipe, she passed away, so she teach me and I taught my father and my brothers how to do the recipes.
Yasmin's mother prepared falafel with some of the same ingredients as Chef Ramzi uses in his Palestinian recipe. Parsley, cilantro, onion, all blended together in the food processor. And after she makes it as smooth as possible, the spices are hand-mixed in. Black pepper, sesame, some salt, and the key ingredient, freshly ground coriander.
It makes the taste of the falafel. So be generous with the coriander.
After frying, the falafel rest, draining their oil. And they seem to call out to me to try my first fava bean falafel.
Here we go. Mmm, coriander.
Yeah,
it's very flavorful, and the salt is just right. Mm. And it's like crispy on the outside, but moist on the inside. Not raw,
but
moist.
Yasmin says she gets lots of Middle Eastern people coming in, but her Egyptian customers want to make sure they're getting it their way. There's a pride in knowing it's an Egyptian tamiya.
They are asking us, is it pure Egyptian? Do you do it with fava beans or garbanzo beans? We say, no, it's made of fava beans. It's pure fava beans, don't worry.
So that gets me thinking. If falafel originated in Egypt with fava beans, why are many made with garbanzo, including ours in Sudan, which is actually geographically the closest to Egypt? I needed some answers, so I called up renowned cookbook author and food historian Claudia Roden at the Oxford Symposium on Food and Cookery in England.
Because they use what they grow, and because they grow chickpeas in Israel and Palestine, so it is the one that they would use. You use what is most available.
Ah, so people made it with whatever bean was most plentiful locally. That makes sense. But then there's another way falafel is made. If you're, say, from Lebanon, you combine the two beans. You go half and half.
Garbanzo beans and faba beans. That's my Lebanese way.
Madame Leila Sfer moved here from Lebanon with her husband and children over 30 years ago. She runs this small catering business in Fremont. No surprise, falafel is her most popular dish.
Who makes the best falafel?
Me.
Madame Leila is 72 with the energy of a 30-year-old. She uses a large commercial grinder to mix her ingredients together. She stands on a crate because she's not tall enough to put her half-and-half mixture in. And when it's done, it looks almost more vegetable-y than beany.
Yours is very green.
And tasty. I put a lot of green. I put the parsley, cilantro. I like it green.
Madame Leila fries her falafel until, she says, they're a magic golden color. And then she grabs a large, paper-thin pita bread wrap, puts three falafels on it.
Some tomatoes. Tahini sauce. Soak it good. Some lettuce.
And the falafel sandwich is complete. And it's not just for her customers. Leila Sfer also enjoys making it for her family and neighbors.
I make it all. Yummy! I like it. And then I make it again and again.
As I taste all the styles of falafel, each tasty in its own way, each flavorful, unique, and worthy of its people's unwavering pride, I realize that maybe it's not who makes the best falafel. As food historian Claudia Roden told me, it's the way you were brought up eating it. That means everything to you. In Fremont, I'm Hannah Baba for Cross Currents.
Want to try your hand at making falafel? Head to our website. We have the recipes from each of the three falafel chefs you heard from in that story at kalw.org. Click on Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Julie Kane. And now we'll turn from food to music. You can hear all sorts of different musical ingredients in the work of Bridget Boyle. In the mix is everything from Eastern European harmonies to Balkan brass bands to pop rock. You can hear all those influences, plus a little country western twang on Boyle's new solo album, The Parts Interior. For this episode of Bay Area Beats, I caught up with her to hear about how she found her voice.
What kind of sound do you make tonight? Ooh, ooh. As you lie down for rest in peace? When the world calls your name.
I come from a rich background, I guess you could say. I've spent a lot of time doing music from Eastern Europe in the context of Kitka Women's Vocal Ensemble and Brass Menagerie Balkan Brass Band. And I also have a trio now called True Life Trio. And but the other part of me is a singer-songwriter, and I've been writing since I was probably about 12 years old.
But how did your life turn its track?
The other major influence is my mother, who is a country singer-songwriter. Her name is Karen Tobin. I started singing backup for her when I was like 6 years old.
She's like a child with the wind wrapped all around her.
And then I actually heard Kitka's music for the first time, and I think my whole life exploded. Like, my heart opened up and I couldn't stop listening to them. And I was so intrigued by the vocal qualities, the harmonies, the language, all of it. Like, something spoke to me on a really deep level. My voice all of a sudden made sense to me. When I sing music from Eastern Europe, I'm singing the words of other people and in languages that I don't understand, I don't speak. Of course, I know what the translations are of the songs that I'm singing, but in the case of my own album and the shows that I'm doing on my own, it's my story. It's something that I can absolutely, without a doubt, stand behind and be really honest in and really vulnerable. The song is called Under Repair, and it's a brand new song that is basically about my heart.
Some days I feel like I am redrawing my life. I found a lovely blank sheet and crawled out from under.
A couple years ago, I stopped drinking and stopped smoking weed and became sober because I used to kind of write or like get into doing music through like being intoxicated. Once I got sober and started like making music sober, I realized that what I was missing was like self-love.
Is under repairs, it's cracked, so handle with care. I hand it over.
I definitely feel like I found a lot more space for myself because I don't waste as many hours like not being here. There's some sort of openness to being a singer, and I do think that the vulnerability is really what draws people to singers. Singing speaks to something so deep in all of us as humans. And the thing is that any human can sing, really, when it comes right down to it. I mean, I hear tons of people say, oh, I don't sing, I can't sing, I'm tone deaf, da, da, da. I don't buy it, you know? I feel like every person in some way can be a singer, you know, and can tell their story, even if it's just like singing along with the radio or like singing in the shower or whatever. You know, I think there's something really human about it and really simple.
That was Bay Area musician Bridget Boyle. You can see her perform this Sunday night at Viracocha in San Francisco's Mission District. Find details at kalw.org. Click on Cross Currents. And if you want to tell us what local musician we should profile next, shoot us an email at news@kalw.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter at KALW. Better yet, give us a call. We're at 415-264-7106. 415-264-7106. Because of you, we can proudly say we are listener-supported public radio. Our team includes Sandia Dirks, Rachel Dornhelm, Nina Gensler-Debs, Angela Johnston, Ted Muldoon, Judy Silber, Stephen Short, Liza Veal, Todd Whitney, and our birthday girl, Olivia Cueva. Happy birthday! Chris Hoff engineered today's show. Our line producer was Audrey Dilling. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This music is by the UC Alumni Chorus. The chorus has an extravagant program planned on Saturday, along with singers from the Santa Barbara Choral Society and the UC Men's and Women's Chorales. Those singers will all be joined by dancers from the Smuin Ballet. That's at the Berkeley Community Theater on Saturday evening at 7:30. For Cross Currents, I'm Julie Kane.